Welcome back to Offworld, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. And we're gathered here today to talk about the season finale of season one of Star Trek Picard. We're going to talk about spoilers. We're going to talk about not only the last episode, but also the entire season as a whole as Star Trek fans. And joining us is a big Star Trek fan. It's Kishore Hari.
Hi. Glad to be back.
Yeah, glad to have all of us back. We kicked off the start of Star Trek Picard, all three of us geeking out about what we were looking forward to and what we were sort of curious about. And now we are at the finale. We should probably say right here up front for everyone that we are definitely going to be discussing spoilers throughout the entire season and the spoilers at the very end of the last episode of this season. So if you do not want spoilers, go watch it and come back to us. Actually, Norm, isn't it correct that CBS has made it all available for a month or so?
Yes, I think there's a promo code GIFT that you can sign up with, and you can watch all of CBS All Access, all their content for a month, which includes, of course, these 10 episodes. Encourage you to take advantage of that if you're curious about the show. And they have renewed it for a second season, and we can talk about that toward the end.
Yeah, so just jumping right into it, you both are such Star Trek nerds. I'm so curious to hear what you thought about the whole season and the last episode. But sort of to kick things off, I wanted to ask about where we are in the Star Trek timeline overall. I believe that with Star Trek Picard, we're at the latest timeline ever in all of Star Trek history. So this is really the future of Star Trek as we know it. What was sort of new to you in this future? Like, what sort of things stuck out to you as being different now that we're so far in the future in Star Trek?
Yes, and this is excluding, I think, some of the time travel-y aspects that you might see in Star Trek. And if you watch Star Trek Discovery, there are things that are going on in that show, which is happening concurrently with Picard, that may or may not dovetail. But I think for the core timeline in terms of the world building of Star Trek, when you think of Next Generation being not only a successor to the original series, but set, 100 years later. This is the furthest. This is the end of the 24th century, I believe, 2399. And it's a big change in, I think, the Star Trek universe. Like, it's Star Trek has always been a mirror to, like, the geopolitics of the world, with the Federation being much like, the United States or the UN. And there's turmoil, right? There's things happening in the Romulan Empire, things that were alluded to with the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. And it's like, it really is a new frontier for that universe. Like, and things are different.
Yeah, I think fundamentally the thing that is most different is what the Federation represents. Like, the Federation in most of the shows represents a very positive, optimistic view towards space exploration. And here we see a Federation in retreat, I think, for most of the show. And that's reflected in the character of Jean-Luc Picard himself, that is so disillusioned and in a lot of ways just broken from the man that we got to know on TNG and in the movies. So I think those are the two things that are different. On the other side of the coin, though, the things that we also see in terms of the future is you see, like, the design of the ships, the kind of technology being used. Like, they have like almost Iron Man like heads up displays in certain areas in terms of the consoles, where we're past kind of like the iPad generation of controlling starships now. It was kind of neat to see that evolution of technology. And it wasn't sort of like overtly discussed. It was just kind of like this thing that underpinned a lot of any of the spaceship travel episodes.
There are two things that you mentioned there, Kishore, that I want to jump onto real quickly. One, Star Trek, traditionally, the kind of futurism that was presented in Star Trek was very influential to technologists. The things like the pad, the PAD in Star Trek was influential to things like how people think about tablet computers. And what we saw in Picard, I felt like, was more a reflection of pop culture, evolution of things like user interface and technology, and less forward-looking and less inspirational than I think Star Trek had been in the past. I don't know if you guys felt that. I don't know if scientists or engineers watching Star Trek Picard look at that show and think, oh, that's a cool technology that I want to invent, or that's a really cool idea for a thing. Whereas you could watch an episode of Next Generation, see something like the holodeck and see something like, you know, a starship and say, okay, that's a really cool piece of technology. I want to make this future real.
Are you saying you don't want to invent the device that just you use your imagination to fix things? Like, why not?
That borderlines so much on fantasy. I did not care much for the magical flute device, whatever it was.
I will say the one piece of technology that did strike me as forward-looking, that was the centerpiece of the finale episode, was the idea of the Golem, the kind of like blank interface synthetic being that a consciousness can be grafted onto, and to be essentially imbued with like all of humanity into a new body. And I do think there is, obviously there's a lot of science fiction that has used that idea long ago, but it's also becoming like, I don't want to say close to science reality, but like there's much more discussion about that science feature now than when like TOS came out, you know, in the 60s.
Yeah, well, you know, let's talk about that aspect a little bit. Like certainly that part reminds me a lot of Westworld, but perhaps that's because Westworld just started airing again. But, you know, a big part, obviously, of this entire season was all about synthetic life. But in this final episode, there was an overt reference to synthetic life from Picard, that they were children that just needed to be taught and that we shouldn't be against them because, you know, they just need an education and then they'll get it and no problem. I wanted to know your thoughts on sort of that as a lesson that's being portrayed in this episode, and also if there's anything to pull from that as sort of like a recommendation or a warning for any AI or synthetic life that we have in the real world. Like, should we be saying that, oh, they're just children and they just need an education, or is that bad?
It's so frustrating because you mentioned Westworld, and I think Westworld and even shows like Black Mirror tap into this idea of putting human brains into a computer or AI. And even Star Trek has talked about that and used that, you know, classic original series episode of The Ultimate Computer and the Daystrom putting his brain in the computer and the idea of holographic characters having sentience and individuality. These are all topics that Star Trek has broached in the past. In a modern day science fiction context, both Westworld and I think Black Mirror tackle the AI issue with much more nuance and subtlety and something that's more appropriate to modern audiences. Whereas the Picard, like the whole idea of his line being, you know, fear is an incompetent teacher and, you know, he'll teach by and lead by example, and this analogy of them being children is a very simplistic view that I think only works if you view the whole series as, okay, this is a classic Star Trek episode. You're not going to solve all these complicated issues in 42 minutes or a season of television, but you'll have some beautiful, you know, dialogue and prose to go with it.
So the one pushback is the thesis that underpins that is a good one. We got to that thesis too late, but the thesis of what does it look like to have first contact with synthetic beings? That's a really interesting question that Star Trek is actually poised to answer. And there's a way they could have approached it that would have been a novel spin that we don't see in Westworld and in other science fiction throughout history. But that paternalistic way that they did, they kind of, sorry, gave no agency to the synthetic life at all. There was this like kind of binary of like, good or bad, that kind of like emerged with them that I think deprived them of what Data stood for as a synthetic, as a hallmark, which is that, yeah, synthetics can actually achieve a level of humanity that maybe even humans struggle to achieve themselves.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good point. And yeah, that was something that I was craving a lot more, I think, throughout the season was just a little bit more of nuance. Perhaps it's because of how the show was promoted at the start. And, you know, it's more nuanced, certainly, in terms of like Picard and how helpful or hurtful he can be in different situations. But certainly more nuanced, like in terms of the science and exploration of topics would be like really welcome. One area that actually that I wanted a bit more nuance or just a more elaboration around was this idea of these uber synths, as one of the characters referred to them as, these 300,000-year-old synthetic life that was created so long ago and have now, you know, evolved to be different. And they're just so different from the synthetic life that we're seeing throughout the show that's very human-like. And they've been, you know, asked to come help save the synthetic life that we see throughout the season. And all we see is like a little blip in the last episode of this like portal being opened and these creepy robotic octopus arms coming out to try and come in. So very much these uber synths are seen as evil. They're portrayed as evil, creepy things. But I would have really loved to know more about it or just, I don't know. It's such an interesting idea.
Yeah. And I completely agree. The representation of these uber synths as techno space Cthulhu was, I think, one of the worst parts of the season because it was so unfulfilling. And there are a lot of theories among Star Trek fans as to whether you can take this admonition at face value. Like, did these uber synths even really exist, or was it just some type of trickery to you know, force civilizations to end? Another way of like answering, you know, why they're, you know, when civilizations reach a certain point, maybe whenever they reach AI, they just end. You know, there was that whole contact aspect to it. We talked about contact before, right? Of like, you know, their version of first contact. When you reach a certain point, you're welcome into this whole new, not literal universe, but this, you know, this universe of civilizations here, AI. And yeah, what we saw with that was super, super disappointing.
Yeah, I thought back to, there was a TNG episode where they had first contact with this kind of supreme-like being at the center of the universe that made first contacts with Reg Barkley. And Reg Barkley became this like hyper-intelligent creature. And he like transforms the Enterprise to like magically have all these like kind of extraordinary warp capabilities. And it like suddenly went to the center of the universe. And like it was the same kind of tension that they were bringing up, which is like, is something good happening, is something bad happening here with the contact? But instead of like really embracing that tension by either just leaving it a full mystery, they gave us like this teaser that just colored the entire experience as these things are bad. And that took out any of the kind of imagination and frankly, like foreshadowing of what season two of this show could really be about. So I would have been fine, like more excited if they opened that portal and nothing emerged. Because like my imagination filling in that would have been great. Or they left it much more of a mystery as to like the intent of these creatures, because that sets up again like another interesting premise for the next season.
Well, I can also accept the fact that maybe the writers and the showrunner wanted it to be an actual MacGuffin and wanted you to not have to care about what was on the other side of the portal, because it is a trope in Star Trek that you have these beings, whether it's Q or the Traveler, that are way beyond, you know, the civilizations that we know, the Romulans, the Klingons, and the Federation. But their existence asks then of the characters that we can relate to reflect and find their place in this galaxy. And in this case, even if we saw nothing at the other end of the portal, what the MacGuffin should have done, what this plot device should have done, was force the synthetics and their creators here, the Federation, and also the antagonist, the Romulans, to reconcile the relationships and dive into the deeper questions, the philosophical questions that are hallmark of Star Trek. Of like, why did Data want to be human, right? Was it meaningful for him to seek humanity, or was that something that was just a directive by his creator?
Or even the idea of transformation of Picard from human to synthetic. would serve as an emissary, as a meaningful emissary for First Contact, like that we need a bridge of somebody that could straddle the line between humanity and synthetic. And who better than Jean-Luc Picard, guided by the memory of Data and his exploration? Like, I get that that's a little corny the way I'm presenting it, but it's like, well, better Star than Trek what is we corny. Got. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so about that sort of interplay between synthetics and organics, actually, you know, that brings us to an interesting plot point that was revealed in the last couple of episodes, which is all of this got started because a bunch of organic life forms got this message that there was going to be hell on Earth, hell on the universe, if synthetic life was allowed to live. And then it was revealed in the last few episodes that, oh, this message that these organics got, it was by accident. It was a message intended for synthetics as sort of a, like, we'll help you beacon. And so there's this really interesting thing that they did where they're like, okay, messages in the form of memories can be transmitted between synthetics and organics, unbeknownst to seemingly everyone. And because it got out of the synthetic mind, it got misinterpreted by organics. And thus we have this entire war and this entire season to begin with. It was just a misinterpretation of a help signal from a synthetic being that wasn't ever intended for humans or others. I thought that was really interesting in terms of what that might mean for our own efforts here at home when we're doing SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and then METI, which is Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and the idea of us putting messages out there that might get received in entirely different ways than we intend, might be received by types of life or not life that we have not anticipated. There's certainly interesting imagination there to go with, but what did you think about this as sort of being one of the major plot points of sharing memories between synthetic life and humans and other creatures?
Well, I think the idea of the misinterpretation, the miscommunication, that is pure Star Trek, right? Like a miscommunication, unintended communication leads to this conflict. That is a parable for wars in our real world and conflict. What's a little more depressing is if you take it at the face value, which is that, you know, when the synthetics received the message, they read it as organics have to die. They will always doom you, or you have to wipe them out. And that didn't feel very Star Trek at all. So I like the idea, and I don't think they addressed it enough, the idea that this whole like religion and this whole order of the Romulan Empire was set out and because of a misreading, and they never reckoned, they never confronted with that, right? We as viewers got to see it, but the Romulans, they were never asked to change their worldview and see it from a different perspective.
Can I be annoying Star Trek fan for a second?
Go for it.
Can everyone just mind meld now? Can just like anyone right, just like right. touch each other's face and be like, here you go.
This is the future of Star Trek.
I think the new canon is that a mind meld is a physical reaction, a physiological effect, not any type of chemical or neurological effect.
That's the fundamental thing is when we saw mind melds early in the Star Trek lore, it was about like emotional and empathetic response between the two people. And here it was used as like a magical transformation of individual based on this like understanding. And I think even in the context of SETI and METI, like when we're talking about messages, we're thinking about it in the old Star Trek way of like, how are these messages going to be translated and understood between cultures that have a different thing? Like, that's why on like Voyager, you'll see stuff with like prime numbers on the golden record and stuff, like trying to get at universality. But here it's just like, it's something, it is magic as opposed to I think that understanding, and that's where like the science part of this started to break down, was it wasn't about mutual understanding. It was about magical transfer of knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I guess I'll leave that part there, but there were other sort of science references that were interesting. That, again, like I just wanted them to be meatier, but like, so the big one was biomimicry. So we saw on this synthetic planet these huge, massive orchid flowers that are capable of deorbiting safely and not safely in other times, you know, spacecrafts. And it's this really fascinating thing. Why does this synthetic planet have orchid flower deorbiters? And like I have so many questions.
I like this, actually. My reading of it, and it wasn't explicit in the show, it's just maybe my headcanon, was that you saw the synthetics also create like a butterfly, right? A synthetic butterfly. And so if they were created, they're purely artificial, but created in the image of an organic, it maybe makes sense for them to, in exploring what they can create, to be even more organic and it be fauna and biological life. And so, you know, whereas humans, we would understand a weapon as purely mechanical, they would understand something to be more biological, at least in appearance, because that's how they think, because it's, you know, they were created in a biological image as well.
I thought the same thing. It was like, especially when we saw the butterfly moving around that society, you could see they, and the one synth wearing that kind of pendant or brooch or whatever it was, you could see they had like an appreciation for beauty and aesthetic. And the thing is, I think we could have gotten there with that culture, but we only got introduced to that culture so late in the run. We didn't have a time to kind of spend with them and like unpack that and meet those characters and build out that sense of humanity. Because the place I struggled with is my relation to them, especially with how they looked, was Data, because of like the gold skin, the fact that Noonien Sung's like son was there. But we never got that sense of their evolution from who Data was. Mm-hmm. And I think they could have gotten there if we had like a little bit more time just to breathe with that. And then I think you would have opened up all these really interesting ideas about what Data talked about through all those seasons of TNG, of like his evolution. I think back to that one Q episode where he gives Data the like momentary ability to laugh and experience that bit of humanity. And wow, would I have liked to have seen that reflected in this culture here, is like seeing that evolution from who Data was. And I think then like the kind of ending scenes with Data and Picard would have had like an extra level of resonance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're seeing this new Star Trek era roll out these short treks, which oftentimes are offloading some of these backstories. So we certainly saw a lot of short treks that were very illuminating for these sort of backstories for Discovery. There's been a little bit, a few of them for Picard, but not as many. Maybe they're saving that for the lead up to season two. Certainly we can hope, maybe. Because yeah, we have these beautiful battle scenes with these orchid deorbiters, you know, that just, I don't know, are ripe for longer storylines or more illumination. Certainly one of the things that we saw on the last episode that I was curious for your thoughts about was the whole thing of Picard, you know, since we said we're talking about spoilers the entire time, Picard dies and then he is, you know, put back, sort of Westworld-esque. His brain got scanned, his consciousness got inserted into a new body that looks exactly like his existing body, but is better functioning. But the big
fully
thing,
functioning.
Fully functioning. But yeah, the big thing for me about this was that he died, they scanned his brain and his consciousness, put it into a new body, and he woke up, and they did that without his permission, without his knowledge, without any consent. Like, so I don't know, what is the ethics of brain scanning and consciousness? Like, he just kind of acts like it's fine, but like, it sounds like in this world, not in, in addition to Nina, do not resuscitate. It's like, don't scan my brain, sort of.
let's get this clear. This whole show, there is no sense of ethics at all. Like, Girardi like murdering Bruce Maddox on like the operating table, like no one had any moral compass here beyond Elnor. And Elnor's is like a warrior kind of moral compass. So,
yeah, and it, more, I completely agree with the consent issue here, and I hope that's something that's addressed. But even beyond that, it's also an existential question of can you consider this Picard, right? Like, part of me wants to believe Picard's dead, and I would like for in season two, this new Picard in a new Golem body, yes, with, you know, the disease cure, but, you know, with a normal expected human lifespan, to also come to terms with the fact that he may have the personality and the memories of Picard, but that Picard also died. And, mm-hmm. you know, and viewers, because it's also a topic that's been explored in Star Trek with transporter accidents and cloning and holographic characters. Like, I don't think that this is the Picard that we know. I'm happy to believe that Picard died, and this is just a new Picard avatar.
Although, I mean, they do talk a lot throughout the season about Picard having become assimilated and him being, you know, an ex-assimilated Borg. So there's perhaps many versions of Picard.
Well, and this Picard, this Golem version, wouldn't have the Borg implants, right? And wouldn't have that. And so all
unless
of the
they
things,
replicated that.
And that then you're asking, there's so many leaps and leaps and leaps in the technology, right? I would love for them to explore that in a second season of what is this Picard, what does it mean for this avatar of new Picard to not have that same biological trauma? And while he may have the memories, mm-hmm. you know, he is kind of an android. He is a synthetic.
I thought it was going to be like the end of a Nemesis with B4, where B4 showed aspects of Data, but not wasn't, and so we would get a Picard that woke up that wasn't totally Jean-Luc Picard anymore. But they didn't go there. And I kind of don't know why, because why give him the kind of deteriorating condition where you have to make this happen unless there's a purpose behind it? And now that's inscrutable.
Yeah. So my final question for both of you is about this, because, you know, in science fiction, there's so much effort around eluding death, be it, you know, Picard dies, but he's actually back, or, you know, just everywhere in science fiction, you are eluding death in a myriad of different ways. But the final episode focuses so much on the final message of this season being about mortality and how mortality is what makes us human, and dying is the ultimate sort of human thing and the moral thing. And it's what Data wants to do. So Data wants to die so that he can be the most human synthetic ever. What are your thoughts on this message of mortality being in this final episode, even though they kind of elude death on their own anyway?
Yeah. The fact that they wanted to have their cake and eat it too, they wanted to have the emotional impact on screen of Picard dying, but then also have a season two, that's a little bit of a cheat. But the Data idea, I think, really resonated with me. I really love that take on it, that whole conversation that, you know, Picard, the whatever Picard, you know, quantum simulation with having a conversation with Data. That closure was the right amount of fan service, where it added meaning to Data's death in Star Trek Nemesis. It gave Picard the character closure that he sought throughout, you know, the entirety of this show, from the very first episode. And it goes back to classic science fiction, Isaac Asimov, Positronic Man, that movie Bicentennial Man, based on the same book, about impermanence being such a quintessential human quality. Now, whether that's something synthetic should strive for, that's an interesting debate, right? Whether, you know, why Data wants to die, and but maybe there are other synthetics who don't want to die and don't feel like that makes them any less human. That's an interesting conflict I'd love to see explored. But for Data's representation, I do feel like that was a true and right way to end his character.
Yeah, I'll say it was also some of the best acting of the series, was that kind of intimate moment between the two of them. What I'd like to see is the next evolution of that. Like, how does Data's death influence Picard's approach as a synthetic now? Like, that's where you get that to really pay off in the story. And we don't have that much science fiction that takes that extra step. And so that can be a really interesting interplay of of how Picard approaches life. And maybe that influences his approach to synthetic life in a very different way than the colony of synthetics think about their own lives. And so that it opens up all this possibility if they actually keep going with that line of thinking. But this season doesn't give me confidence that they have the focus to stay with one line of thinking throughout. Because I thought the meditation we were getting as I was going through the series was really about the sort of Borg versus human kind of meditation that was like coming up again, and like what it means, like, can humanity return to you, that kind of stuff. But we walked away from that in the middle of the series, like all the way to the point where I'm like, why was the Borg part of this series?
Yeah.
Well, because we've got to have Seven of Nine. Well, yeah. So, I mean, you both point out there's a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of plot devices that we're curious about. But certainly it was at least, you know, fun to have Picard back in our lives in some form or another. You know, it's an interesting season, and certainly they've set themselves up to do a lot more in season two if they choose. So I guess the exciting thing is that, you know, we just have no idea where season two is really going to go. It probably synthetic life was all of season one. They'll probably have a different topic for season two, but it was fun getting to geek out with both of you, both at the beginning of this season and at the end. And at least I think there's a bunch of interesting scientific topics to imagine about and sort of insert our own ideas into where they could go. And that's always the funnest part of any science fiction anyway, is just like what it inspires you to start thinking about, regardless of if it shows on the screen or not. So thank you both so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. And yeah, we'll hopefully be back next season when they have a season two, and chatting about that. Any hopes and fears, last things you want to say about things you want to see, Kishore?
I don't think we got resolution to the kind of xenophobia element of the Romulan take now, like after their homeworld is destroyed. We got a really one-sided take on who the Romulans are near the end of the show, and I think there's a lot to tease out. And his bodyguards early on in the series represented a much more nuanced take, and I would love that kind of nuanced take on Romulans. I have always been fascinated with Romulans as a character arc throughout multiple series. So give me more Romulans, but a more nuanced take on them.
Yeah. And the last thing I want to say is I think for some of the moments of fan service and nostalgia, they absolutely got right. Bringing back some beloved characters, Riker and Troy were wonderful. Every minute they were on screen, it felt very comforting. And I don't know if they'll have any more of that in the next season, but I'd welcome that because that was the best part of the show for me. Alrighty. Well, that concludes our discussion of season one of Picard. We'll hopefully have more episodes of Offworld to come, recording remotely now that we're in this state in the world. But you can always listen to past episodes of the podcast. Just go to tested.com/offworld or subscribe to the YouTube channel and find us all on social media. Thanks again, Kishore, and we'll see everyone next time.